This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to Blakey's Booth Room, the number one Cardiff City podcast, brought to you by Wales Online.
Hello, welcome to Blakey's Booth Room, the Cardiff City podcast by Wales Online, in association with Giovanni's Restaurants. I'm Ben James. Today I'm joined by Nathan Blake, as always, but there's a few new faces on the podcast today. There's no Paul Abandonato. Is that a good thing, bad thing? We'll find out in the next... in the next 40 minutes, there goes my job. Wales Online. We got two Toms, Tom Coleman, Tom Prosser. How are you doing, chaps?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Yeah, good. Happy to be on.
Two debuts.
To be on a proper podcast. Yeah. Proper football podcast.
I'm not gonna be drawn on this. For a first time, this is going to be too much.
Yes.
that's what happens if you don't make the stars tea.
Here we go. What's that? After about, what, 3-4 minutes?
No, I didn't mention it, did I?
That was me. That was me being mysterious.
Yeah, it was. Come on.
So we're in quite a good mood. Weirdly, but yet...
I think the mood is lifted, isn't it? It's done, isn't it? It's done and dusted.
It was a weird game, wasn't it, on Saturday, because you felt the battle had already been lost the week before, but...
Yeah. And they didn't really...
They didn't do
much in the game, did
they? No. The scoreline was close, but Palace could have had 4 or 5.
Yeah. And, I mean, City had chances, but I think they weren't really... I think once the... I was surprised when the OG went in. I was really expecting like a real lift. But if you watch the game, when the goal goes in, I don't think there's one player who gets excited. No. They're all kind of like, okay, and start walking back to the halfway line, almost like in resignation. So that really surprised me. I thought they'd really go for it, because it was actually... There's often a combination. Sometimes the fans have to lift the players, and vice versa. Sometimes the players have to lift the fans. But the fans were clearly trying to lift the players throughout, but it just never really materialised.
Because the timing of that goal should have been perfect, shouldn't it? Because obviously Palace took the lead through Zaha, and then literally 2 minutes later, before the mood could really get too sort of down.
Despondent, yeah.
You know, they get the goal, fans are suddenly...
Yeah.
Well up for it, but then it just felt like Cardiff just let Palace play again, and the way Palace were playing on the weekend, you let them play, the front four, the movement they were making.
Well, I've said it so many times, mate, and it's becoming like a scratched record, and I'm almost bored of saying it. And if you're not going to do anything to counter it, then there's no point in really highlighting it, because you highlighted in order to fix it, or at least attempt to fix it, and you've had probably 18 months to try and resolve the issue of someone rotating. If it wasn't done before, I've always said the game they played Sheffield Wednesday at the start of the Championship campaign last season, and Sheffield Wednesday rotated mad on them. You should have come up with a solution, and it's not difficult, but you should have come up with a solution to deal with teams who play that way against you, and it hasn't been forthcoming. So Palace on the weekend, they looked like a top six team. They really did. That front line were unbelievable. But it's what a little bit of movement does for you, and drawing people out of certain positions. The amount of times Bennett got drawn over to the right hand side.
He looked like he's playing right back at times,
didn't he? And Townsend drew him over, and then what would happen, the play would break down a little. Townsend would stay in the right channel with Zaha outside him, and Bennett would run across back to the left back position, because he knew he was out of his position. But then you've created the overload because Cardiff are not good at keeping possession of the ball. So as soon as Crystal Palace pick it up again, you've got an overload down our right, their left, which is often where the goals came from. So it's no point, like I said, it's no point getting annoyed about it or upset about it. It is what it is. If you're not going to deal with it, then you have to take the punishment on the chin.
Yeah, Blakey, this kind of man-marking style, if you like, I noticed they did it quite a lot of times last season as well, when sides have those players that like to take you on and the ones to watch. But how would you say would be best to correct that? Because the thing is with zonal marking, if you say, all right, you're in charge of this area, perhaps sometimes then you get players which aren't sure of you know, who they are to look after. So how do you say is the best way to go around?
What happens with when you're playing against rotation, it's just communication. So you attach yourself to your nearest man and then you communicate across the line. As soon as your man, if I'm marking you, Tom, and you leave the space and you go from, say, the right wing position and you start drifting across, I'll follow you so far. But then as soon as I start to come across and Ben's inside me, I tell Ben, you're coming. And then Ben will tell Tom, right, the other Tom's on his way across, and so on and so forth, right? So even if there's a 2v1 created somewhere along the line, what happens is our shape is not disrupted, yeah?
Yeah.
Because what they're trying to do is create an overload or a situation where you are in behind our midfield and attacking our back four or attacking our two centre-halves or whatever, right? So in that case, if we don't communicate, it makes life so much easier for you. If I follow you everywhere, right, I only need to switch off for 1 minute or think to myself, I've left my position and now the right back is now steaming forward into the hole that I've just left. It's just talking and communication, attaching yourself to the nearest man. If that nearest man then moves, it's me telling my inside or behind me or whatever, right, he's coming. And then everyone has the same understanding. Because it's only 11v11, you know? It's only 11v11. And you can only overload so much. It's not like you don't see like 5v1. They're trying to create a 3v2 or a 4v3 or even a 3v3 with one man running at you and like the Red Arrow's dad in across a movement and what have you. So it's difficult and it takes time to develop, but you know, one thing has been said about the Cardiff team, they're a good team, they're a unit, they're together. So when a team has that sort of attitude, and it should be quite easy to understand.
I mean, defensively though, Cardiff, I know it's very, very easy on the back of conceding four goals to criticise Cardiff defensively, but for me, the defence has been probably the biggest strength for Cardiff.
It's been decent. It's been decent, but the problem is you work on that because you don't work on retaining the ball. Cardiff have poor ball retention. So in their probably highest stat this season, there's probably been 32-34% of possession. Now, if you've not got possession of the ball and you accept that, what do you work on? Stopping the opposition, getting through you. You play a deep block and you make sure, right, we can't open you up, so to speak. So it's no surprise, and Etheridge has had a brilliant season also. So it's no surprise that Cardiff have got like 12 or 13 clean sheets this season.
It's mad. Like for a team relegated.
Yeah, but then you look at how many goals they've scored.
Well, that's been the problem.
And that is, there lies the problem. You know, you're focusing on one area of a game that has probably four or five major areas that you have to focus on.
Is that down to Warnock, though?
Of course it's down to Neil and his staff.
Because, I mean, he does value the importance of a clean sheet, doesn't he? I mean,
yeah, of course you do. Of course.
A certain number.
Of course, clean sheets. But you go into every game with a point. That's a given. They give you that. The idea is to get three, you have to score. If you don't score and the opposition do, you lose. It's as simple as that. So it's how you look, how you approach, how you visualise the game. For me, you know, ball retention in the Premier League is like 9/10 of the law. I'm not saying you're going to go to Man City or Man United and do them for possession. But teams like Bournemouth have proved you can go toe for toe, toe-to-toe with the likes of Everton, Watford, all these teams, you know, and you can beat them with possession-based football. And I just think, you know, we are in a dilemma at the moment. People are saying to me, oh, should Warnock go or should Warnock stay? On one hand, you've got the club knows very little about putting together a squad and building a club, I think, personally, because if you look at the record before Warnock came, it was a nightmare and we were going nowhere fast. So you're relying on what's already there. Or you keep Warnock and nothing changes and you find yourself, hopefully, back in the Premier League next season, but with the same problem, facing the same dilemma. So do you change it now or do you change it later? But either way, it's going to have to change because you can't keep getting so far, hitting the ceiling and coming back.
It's a really strange one, isn't it? Because I think you're on social media, etc. All the fans, I think, really are torn over this. Like, I think most fans, they don't really particularly want Warnock to go, or certainly they won't come out and say that. But I think most fans at the same time wouldn't be against a change in direction.
No, and I accept that. That's, I think that's a great point, Tom, because that's, it is a dilemma. That is the problem. Because I think they feel, like I feel, well, we're not really confident in the club as a single entity. It's taken Neil Warnock to come in, steady the ship, get everyone together, and we've got promoted at the time where I was probably 2 years ahead of where we thought we would be, at least. But when you get that prize, I would say, once you get to the Premier League, you've got to have had some sort of plan to stay there and to become sustainable. And I think the chairman, Mehmet, admitted on BBC that their planning wasn't the best. And I always say, if you've not got a plan, you know, you should, the plan doesn't go as you win. The plan starts today and is delivered throughout the season. But you also know we've planned for if we go up, if we stay in this league, or if we get relegated. We always look at worst case scenario and you plan 3 years. And then after that, you've got another 2 years, which extends the 3 years to 5 years, and then a decade. And hopefully within that decade, you become a sustainable Premier League club.
Is it not feasible, though, that relegation could be part of that plan? I mean, I know that sounds like a silly thing to say.
You have to. You have to.
If you look at how Burnley bounced back, and then, you know, next season...
You have to plan for the worst, first and foremost.
And I do wonder as well, the summer signings, you know, Bobby Reid, Josh Murphy. Yes, we didn't really get value for many of them this season, but we can... They'll still be great signings for the Championship now this season. A bit unlike last time when we were stuck with people like Gary Medel struggling to offload him, and I think in the end we had to sell him for slightly less than we bought him. With Josh Murphy and Bobby Reid, if they do go, they'd probably go for the same or if not more. So I think that is sensible business and perhaps was a bit of planning for...
I
think the only issue I would say there is, you say if they go, who's realistically going to come
buy
in for
them? That's that. Well, it's not going to be Premier League clubs.
Especially for the amount of money that Cardiff pays.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get your money back for either of those players if you was to sell them tomorrow. I think you'd do well to get, you'd probably get around 7 or 8 for Murphy and probably 4 or 5 for Reid, I think.
But in a way, it is kind of a strength for Cardiff because I can't see that many of that team being poached by other teams.
Mm.
But you look at Fulham, for example. I mean, the amount of stars that they could have, you know, that squad could be gutted when it comes back.
But in
Cardiff, there's that, a couple of
just in the midfield.
There is, I think, but you are going to lose players also. That's, you know, players like Gunnarsson, important players. Well, I understand what you're saying, and they are probably better equipped. Well, they are better equipped for the Championship, but I still maintain, you know, this notion was exactly the same in 13-14. When it was almost like taking for granted when we bounced back.
That's a good point.
And I'm saying, like, okay, it doesn't matter what squad you've got, right? You get into a mentality and you drop down to the Championship, and it's a shock. It's a culture shock. Even though you think, oh, we were only there 12 months ago, it is a shock when all of a sudden, the shock doesn't come in August or September. The shock comes in like January, February, March, when those games are just continuous. And you're really tired, you're knackered, you're thinking, right, I could do with like a Saturday to Saturday, and it's not. You've got to go Saturday, Tuesday, then the FA Cup kicks in and this and that. It's far more difficult, and you've just lost sight of that a bit. But
I mean, going back to Warnock, though, he loves the slog of that, doesn't he? He relishes in that.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's ultimately, right, Tom, my thing is, we say the Premier League is the best league in the world, yeah? So how can you be ill-prepared from there? How can you expect, because no one's going to give you nothing. Now, as underprepared we weren't ill-prepared, we were underprepared for me. We had a good go at it. Now, but just imagine if you were prepared. Because I said last season, what I would do, I was asked, would you get rid of Neil Warnock to go to the Premier League? I said no. But what I would do is bring in a top coach, right? Because I know tactically we need more. We can't go man for man. Not in the Premier League. That's like just handing candy to a kid and expecting him not to eat it. He's just going to chomp on it. Right? It you cannot go and do those sorts of things in the Premier League and get out of jail. I think most of us this year were hoping Cardiff would stay up. We didn't truly believe that Cardiff were going to stay up. And then as the results got, as they got nearer and nearer that 30-point mark, we started thinking, yeah, oh, we got a real chance.
Particularly after the Southampton away victory.
Absolutely.
Because I went to that game, and particularly, I thought, gosh, this could be a big moment, that late winner, I thought that could be the big turning point. But yeah. I think what they haven't done as well is back up a good performance this season. They haven't got successive wins.
Yeah, I mean, as high as that result was, the Fulham and the Crystal Palace results was...
It was just as bad, but
listen, it's not the end of the world, you're going down, but you've got a good squad, but something needs to move on. Now, that's not me saying Warnock has to go, but I'd go back to what I said 2 years ago, and I think had you as a club put those sorts of structures in place, put people in places where Neil's 71, he's not going to be here for 3 or 4 years. So you have to succession plan anyway. So why not bring someone in who is a top coach in position where, right, he's going to help develop the team to be better in possession, better shape, improve on the defensive unit, even though it's pretty good, and then put in a structure where your scouting system is not like Neil's scouting system, it's Cardiff City's scouting system. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And you have contacts and place people all around the globe in order to find the best players, because you've got to unearth gems now, because it's very difficult to find a secret player. N'Golo Kante's, once that was done, everyone starts looking in like the French second division and everything like that, right? But you've got to be able to go Croatia, Moldova, these places, the South Africa, America,
yeah,
Brazil, yeah. You've got to have contacts everywhere. Turkey, strong footballing nations, Iraq, Iran, Iran is a strong footballing nation, Iraq knows. But it's not mean to say you're not going to find a gem. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, the same applies to the academy setup, surely.
Well, the academy needs to improve because they haven't produced a player for, I think, since Aaron Ramsey. That's worth talking about.
Mm. I mean, one of the first things he did, he kind of sort of put in a mass upheaval of the academy.
Yeah, he just... Well,
and obviously, results from that take time.
Yeah, well,
I think the longer it
the
goes
upheaval
on,
was cutting. It wasn't a system he's influencing there. It was just cutting people who he realised...
He wasn't happy.
At 21, 22, you're not going to be... You're not going to be... If you're not made the first team at 21, 22, it's highly likely that you're not going to, because most people make their debut at 17, 18, 19...
Do you think there's a chance relegation might give some of the younger kids a chance, Alice Swansea? I mean, I know Swansea is different because...
I think you've got Kieran Brand.
Can't believe you mentioned that name on this podcast.
Is there not an argument to say, though, that the Dan Jameses, Connor Robertses, those sort of players don't emerge in a Premier League team?
Well, I think they will. I think the difference is, if you look 10 years ago... that was Cardiff producing player after player after player. Mm. And Cardiff always produced players through their youth system. Always. Always. You look at Jason Perry throughout the youth system. Damon Searle through the youth system. You know, you could go on and on. Gareth Abraham through the youth system. These are just players I played with. Mm. So, you know, and then you had under Dave Jones, you had a lot of players come through the youth system, namely Aaron Ramsey.
Joe Ledley.
We had loads. And I've had like a decade or so in the Welsh international setup. Mm. Now what you're looking at and thinking, well, Swansea have got a load of young players coming through, a load of young players going into playing for the Welsh national setup. And as Cardiff, as the academy, I'd be thinking to myself, or if I was the owner, Vincent Tan, I'd be thinking to myself, you know, is that working? Is that functioning right? Now, you can't tell me it is if you're not producing players for the first team. Because it's not like Cardiff as a first team that, you know, you're having to get past players like, you know, top players like a Zaha or a Harry Kane or anything like that. You've got good players who don't play a lot of football. So if you're a footballer, you know, if you're Neil Warnock, you should be looking to develop those players into right, improving our game on how we retain possession of the ball, blah, 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 and becoming a stronger outfit. Because without the ball, you can't win the game. It's as simple as that. So it's all joined up thinking, and it's a culture created from, I say, from probably 12 years old all the way up to first team. You know, where everyone's thinking the same. This is what we require as a philosophy at this club. And I don't think that's ever been developed at Cardiff or hasn't been developed for a long time.
There's a Neil Warnock philosophy there, the club at the moment, isn't it? But would you say that, like you said earlier, that needs to now become a Cardiff City philosophy? It needs to be that handover kind of...
Well, it should always be a club philosophy, and then what you do is you bring in managers who fit into that sort of the way you play, the way you think, the way your fans are, because your fans are your constant. And I've always said, you know, Cardiff wouldn't accept, you know, kind of 20, 30 passes a goal, sort of Arsenal kind of football. But they accept the Chelsea style of football, yeah, which is quality football at a high tempo with top quality players.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chelsea don't overplay. Arsenal are at times guilty of that.
They get it to the right areas.
But they get it to the right areas quickly, and they're strong in what they do. So I still say, you know, you can keep Neil Warnock, but you have to have something that's developing. That's your future, which improves the way you play, improves your ball retention, the goals you score, you know, and developing players who can deal with problems on the pitch if a team is rotating against you, blah, blah, blah. This is a modern day footballer. Footballers are intelligent, you know, on the pitch especially. No, I don't know about off the pitch. But they're intelligent. They understand like systems of play. You know, this is what the academy system is set up for. The ECCC, whether it's Cat 1, 2, 3 or 4. It's set up so you can deal, you're coached in these areas and how to deal with these problems. So, you know, the standard for me just needs to be lifted another level.
From Neil Warnock's point of view, though, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it, to balance all that up with the pressures of the Premier League. I mean, because it is a high-pressured league and results are...
Well, it's the job, mate. You know, you can't just look at the first team. You know, I don't know if he does or he doesn't. I can't speak on what he does on a day-to-day basis, but... If you're, you know, if I'm the manager, I have Tom making sure he's overseeing the 23s and the youth team. And from time to time, I'm going to come and watch. And I want to know from Tom, right, who are you saying are the main four players? If I had to pick four players, who would you say they are? And then I'm going to sit and watch, because if your eye is not what I think it should be, you're out the door and someone else comes in.
But do you think
if you're putting forward players who I can clearly see, no, that's not right.
But if Cardiff, say, stay up in the Premier League,
mm.
are we having this conversation? Do you think?
We'll always have this. Me personally, yes. Yeah. Because I want the team to be better. Yeah? I say it's a capital city.
Mm.
I'm like, you know, people look at me like I'm from a different planet if I say Cardiff into Europe.
I suppose the thing with that question is, if Cardiff stay up, do we have this question? Can Cardiff stay up?
in the Premier
League playing that way. I nearly climbed the mountain but I didn't, I nearly got run over but I didn't, I nearly drowned but I didn't, if you looked at that squad, you got to be careful.
Yeah,
but if you looked at that squad, you looked at what people were saying about it. I mean, people were saying that you'd think that Cardiff were going to get relegated.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but we didn't say that. We didn't say that. We knew it would battle and it would fight and it would have a go.
It was always, for me, it's Neil Warnock, if you break it down to essentials, he's a plaster sort of manager. And if you've got a wound, you put him on over the plaster, and he's become that,
but I don't think that's quite fair.
It's not fair on him.
Because he's got 40 years experience doing what he's doing, and he's got 8 promotions, let's not forget, right? But so I understand what you're saying, right?
But at the heart and soul of his manager, he takes a team that isn't achieving stuff, and he makes them more than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you look at the squad that he's had this year, I mean, seven of the starting 11 he had in his first game against Bristol City, they were in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So it was on paper, that's a Championship squad, and probably not even a good Championship squad, because when he took over, they were 23rd. So it was a Championship squad sliding towards League One. Mm. Now, maybe Neil Warnock can't quite manage in the Premier League, but that Cardiff City team without Neil Warnock could not survive in the Premier League. So it's always a sort of catch 22.
No. I don't believe that.
You don't think that?
I know. I would say to you, well, if someone came in and helped them improve their ball retention, that would make them better. If someone came in and that same person not only worked on ball retention, but also worked on how to defend against teams that rotate, that would make them better. These are things that...
You're probably looking there at sort of like a time frame of like maybe 3 years, 4 years.
Imagine you can't take 3 years to learn rotation if you're a player. You've got to learn it in 3 days sometimes.
But don't you also...
No, listen, I'll tell you now. Okay, I'll give you a prime example. Wales international team, Bobby Gould to Mark Hughes. Went from absolute struggle to almost qualifying for the Euros, I think it was, for the first time in our 60-odd years, right? Why? Because everything was picked up. Things that you don't even think about. Things as simple as food. What we eat, how we eat, when we eat. Different. Better. Yeah? Training sessions. Instead of one on a poor pitch somewhere, we trained 3 times a day on quality pitches. So you don't. It's not just the coaching. It's the frame of mind, the state of mind. Yeah. So you come in every morning and don't say hello or good morning to people. It sets you in a mood. If you come in morning, it sets a standard. Yeah. It sets a culture throughout the workplace. Now it sounds silly and they sound small. But lots of these small things in football add up to big things, right? Now, if the culture within my club is right, for instance, it wouldn't take me 3 years to get players to understand how to work against rotation or how to put. That's pre-season, those things are done, quick succession. If you're playing against a team this weekend who play long ball, we got to change the way we defend in. So we work on it during the week. If we're playing against a team who rotate a lot, we work on it during the week. We also work on our strengths and how we're going to, going to expose the opposition also. But, these things, like I say, footballers are quite intelligent. They learn football and things. And they pick them up quickly, hence why you become a professional at what you do. So there's lots of room for improvement in lots of different areas for me. The academy can, if you go from the bottom, the academy can improve, right? And the amount of players that are coming out there, the 23s can improve. Then, the 23s, it's not about becoming a 23 and staying there. The idea is to then migrate to the first team or a first team, get out and play first team football, get your experience. Then the first team, right? Can they improve? Well, defensively, they're very good, but they let themselves down at times against teams who rotate, right? So fix that problem, right? Goal scoring. Well, how many times have you seen ball retention and then a beautiful move around the 18-yard box where maybe a striker comes short or this or that? Doesn't happen enough. Right, improve that. Fullbacks, well, we know one fullback doesn't like to get forward, but we know the other fullback, Bennett, he can get forward and cross the ball and run. Right, so how do we then utilise his strength of getting forward and crossing the ball? Right, do we go with Nias, who we need to stretch the team? Or do we go with Zahor? If Paul was here, he'd say Zahor. Well, if Zahor's going to play, right? If you're not playing at this level, we can't use you.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not playing with your back to goal, holding up the ball, stretching teams and scoring goals. If you're scoring goals, I can kind of allow some of the things.
Yeah.
But if you're not scoring goals, you're not stretching teams and you're holding up the ball just okay, that's no good to me. So when I go out and sign players, I don't sign... There's nothing to do with Reed or Murphy. I still think they're good signings. But I don't sign those players. I sign an experienced striker, like a Glenn Murray, who I know is going to get me double figures in that season. Then I sign an experienced midfielder. Yeah? And maybe a fullback on the right-hand side who's very good at defending but can get forward as well, rather than play Manga there out of position for... You know, and this isn't... I'm not talking about going and spending £100 million. But then you look at the scouting system and you have to have the right scouting system to go and pick up the players for the right price to develop into your team and how you play and how you're going to stay in this Premier League. It's all connected, mate. Right from the very rooter to the tutor and vice versa.
Nathan, what do you do next season on that? Because Bruno Manga, you know, obviously being in play for the Championship next year, he's going to want game time. With Morrison and with Bamba as well, how do you fit them all in? So if you continue to play Manga right back just to fit him into the side because he deserves to be playing, you're then repeating that problem, aren't you?
Absolutely, I think, and that's the problem. For me, I think Bruno's the one player we'll struggle to hold on to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I think he can play, I think, like a team like Watford or Bournemouth, and he was... Often he was laps in the Championship.
He wants
it's almost too easy for him. But what you've seen in the Premier League is he's shone because he has got those qualities that many questioned in the Championship.
He's been up there with one of my players of the season.
Yeah, well, he is my player of the season and Everidge as well. You know, they're difficult to separate, but they are both very good. But, mate, we can talk about the problems on and on, you know, you can go on, you can talk about like defence, you can talk about who you're going to sign, you can talk about, but there's got to be a cohesive plan for the whole. It's no good saying, oh, we'll have Neil for one more year and then when he's gone, we'll look at it.
You've got to put that in motion
now. You've got to say, well, we're going to keep Neil for one more year. I would say we'll keep Neil for one more year. He's a coach. It's not a choice, you're taking him, right? He's going to help with some of the problems that you're dealing with, right? Because clearly Kevin Blackwell and Ron Jepson haven't.
Is Warnock going to stand for that, though?
Then you walk, then. This is not about Neil. Yeah. This is about the club. Nothing is bigger than the club. Nobody is bigger than the club.
What I would say is Fulham perhaps had that idea with Scott Parker, bringing him into the fold, and now, you know, now he's went on to be caretaker and now looks likely to be the next manager. So they had that planned. So do you think someone of the Scott Parker mould, kind of, can you think of anyone you think would benefit?
Yeah, I know loads, but like that's not my job, and I don't get paid by Cardiff City. I get paid by Media Wales, and I think Cardiff City have taken enough from this podcast and applied it over the years. So, you know, I ain't doing no one's job for them anymore. You know, I can speak in general terms, but specifics, no, I can't.
Sorry. You mentioned Eddie Newton the other week on the podcast.
Yeah.
He would be
unbelievable.
Ideal, wouldn't it? Especially for that role, where he's come from.
That sort of role, and then to go on and manage, he would be...
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Listen, like I said, Di Matteo didn't bring him to Chelsea and win a Champions League by luck. Now, Chelsea were struggling in the Champions League when they got there. Yeah. All right? And Di Matteo didn't go and get him because he's not very good or he's his mate or anything. He went and got him because he knows what he's capable of. Even though the glory was really on Roberto, Di Matteo, the work behind the scenes, the training pitch, on the pitch. And like I said then, and I'll say it now, if you went and spoke to David Luiz or Aspilicueta or Peter Cech from past, or Diego Costa or Eden Hazard, and asked them, how good a coach is Eddie Newton? I bet most of them would say he's probably the best at the club.
Yeah, and I suppose...
Now, you then as the owner, got to go out and find those things. And like I'm saying, it's not my job to...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's our job to analyse the game, really, but we do so much more. And that's why fans love it, because it's not, you know, we're not bragging or anything like that, but just, it's a vision. You've got to have a vision for what you're doing. You've got to understand your fans and what they want. Like I say, they can't, when we get relegated or promoted, they can't change clubs. Right? They either, when it gets too bad for them to handle, they stay away. You've got to understand, like the owner and what have you, didn't understand why the attendance is kept up. Because it's torture, literally. it's serious. That's how you watched that game last night, Liverpool-Barcelona. You see what football means to people. Don't get me wrong, it's not life or death. No, it's not. But it's so emotional. It means so much to people. And it was a beautiful shot of the team, Jurgen Klopp, and then he flashed into the crowd. You've seen Kenny Dalglish and what have you, and I was just like, I don't care whether you're a Liverpool fan or not. That is what you call history. That is proper. You look at Cardiff City, when do you ever see former players? Like, fans always talk about the 93 winning the league and all that, and from my era. I don't see any of the players. I don't see Carl Dale. I don't see Chris Pike. I don't see Paul Ramsey. Captain, I don't see Paul Miller.
Is that down I don't to see Nicky Richardson.
It's down to the club. You invite these people, you get them on the pitch, the 93 winning team, you know, you give the fans the feeling. You know, these things are so important to fans, so the dad can say. So many fans come to me and go, Nate, will you sign me? So I have a picture of my kid, and the kid's like about 7 or 8, and they go, oh, you don't, he doesn't understand. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't get it. He only sees what. And it's like,
that's why I was like the first time I did this pod, mate. I didn't have a clue
you were. Right, there you go. That's because you watched the egg shape ball. You chased that. That's why your head's always moving. You're trying to follow where it's going to bounce. Yeah, but listen, I love the club, and I think it can. You know, I said on air on Saturday. I remember being a kid and watching Brian Clough speaking to, what was the Leeds manager?
Don
Revy. And saying, no, you can do it, but I like to do it better.
Yeah.
Right? And as a kid, that stuck in my head, and it stuck with me to this day. I'm saying Neil Warnock's done a great job, but I just want to do it better. I don't want to be worried about relegation from the Premier League. I want to be thinking about getting into Europe and how that's going to affect us, and whether our squad is big enough to be able to cope with going back in June and pre-season. And I want to think those great positive plans. Just like, who's up there now? Wolves. Just like Wolves are thinking and planning. Now, if it can happen to them, why? Just if someone can say to me, well, it doesn't happen to people like Cardiff. Okay. Yeah, Burnley got in there last season, didn't they? Burnley got in there.
Yeah.
Swansea have been in there.
You look at the amount of money Wolves have spent, though, to get there.
Yeah, but then you look at the amount of money Fulham spent, and they're going out of there. So it's not what you spend, it's how you spend it.
Mm. And Wolves spent that money with a vision. He signed players.
Absolutely, that they know can play in the top.
Well, quite a few of that squad were in the Championship. I think that was where Fulham fell down, because they more or less gutted their midfield.
Yeah, well, that was just...
Didn't even gut them, they just signed players with them. They kept
Chiller, I like the look of him.
Signed about 100 million.
But that's where the game is. You've got to understand, if you're Vincent Tan, you've got to understand Ken Chu, you've got to understand Mehmet Dama. Understand that are agents that will tell you things, and 99.9% agents are feathering their own nest. They're telling you things, take this man because, you know, you'll do this and do that and do this. They know that that's never going to materialise. But they know once he's into your club, you owe me X amount of dough. Do you know what I mean? And it's understanding the game, not getting played, rather than relying on people who don't really have your club's best interest at heart. Yeah. Build within your own scouting structure. Everybody's working for the betterment of Cardiff City. Don't go and rely on people who had done a business deal with 4 years ago over a, you know, an oil field in wherever. You just don't do it. Mm. Who's now coming to football? Why? Because it's swashbuckling money in football. It's just understand the game and play it. Play y'all.
That's the best place to leave it for a quick break. So yeah, we'll have a quick break and we'll be back to speak about a little trip to Old Trafford this Sunday.
Subscribe to The Boot Room on iTunes or listen on walesonline.co.uk.
Right, we're back on the podcast. This would normally be Ask Blakey. I'll get my own apology out of the way before you lot all dog me in. Unfortunately, I forgot to put out a request for Ask Blakey, so sorry about that. We'll just ask Blakey ourselves. Yeah.
Just can't get the staff.
Just cannot get the staff.
That's why I'm hoping one of you two Toms can take over. Or go back to John Dole or Dominic.
I've always thought we should go back to John Dole in the days of filming. You know,
that's God rest him. Great man. Special great man. That was.
So a little trip to Old Trafford to face some team called Manchester United on the weekend.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't really matter now, but yeah. How would you line up? Because looking at the team they went up with Palace, I remember getting the team sheet and you looked at that team and it felt to me like this was Warnock setting us up for a I told you so moment when he went that sort of brash and attacking. It was, you know, you had what was Gunnarsson in midfield with Camarasa, Bobby Reid, Murphy, and Mendes Lang, Murphy,
Danny Ward up front.
Danny Ward. I just made me think, right, well, Gunnarsson
told you so in what sense?
Because obviously on the Friday before he sort of said, look, we're not cautious, that's rubbish. Obviously, all the flack he got for the Fulham game. I was expecting to be right. Okay, we'll play an attacking line. Palace will beat us 3-0, and they go. See, that's what happens.
All the fans.
If you switched those teams around, you would have had a better chance of staying up.
That's the thing. It was. It felt to me like he was
chasing.
He was there, like, oh, you know, I'll play an attacking team, and if it goes wrong, I can say, well, see, I was right. Not.
Yeah, but that's my manipulation. That's what I said last week on the podcast. That's manipulation.
But then really,
I'm not interested in that. I see what I see, and I know what I know. That team that he played against Palace
would have stretched Fulham.
Would have really tested Fulham. Yeah. Really tested Fulham for me. So, you know, it's okay saying I told you so or this or that. Listen, this is the Premier League. I ain't got time to play games. I ain't got time. You know, if you make a mistake, hold your hands up and say, yeah, I was at fault there. If you don't think you made a mistake, don't. But I get paid to analyse. Whether that's positive or critical, that is just what we do. You're not going to control that, or you're not going to control someone like myself. I'm just going to call it as I see it. Cardiff have done so much better than what people, you know, like I've said before, people like Chris Sutton were saying, 10 points.
Yeah.
10 points. Well, I take some pleasure in getting to 31 points, but
we knew that
ultimately, we failed.
Yeah.
Yeah? The idea is to stay in and build. Now, I can also look and go, well, there's so much room for improvement, and we almost succeeded. So what do we do? Do we give Neil more, you know, more people or more whatever, you know, to be able to create a better squad? Or do we take some of that responsibility away from him and say, regardless of what you like, these are the players, and not we're going to force these players on you, but you'd give me a reason why I'm going to sign N'Golo Kanté. You give me a reason why he doesn't fit into what we do or what we're trying to achieve.
I think you could say that about Bobby Reid, can't you? I mean, he's came in £10 million price tag.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, at this business end of the season, he's barely been used. And you sort
he's
of
barely
think,
been used this season,
he's
really.
Played 15, and think, he started 15 games.
Mm. And I think if you bring a player in for that price tag and you're not going to use him, what's that, from my point of view, I sort of think, well, what's the point in having him?
you answered. I haven't got all the answers. Do you know what I mean? I haven't. I'm with you.
But I mean, I remember sitting there at Fulham, and you know, there was no Josh Murphy, no Bobby Reid. I'm thinking, you know, there's a team battling relegation. They've got £20 million worth of talent.
Yeah. There's a couple of minutes out of it in the most important game.
And I just sort of think those are the games that you need those
speed
kind of players
and those ability. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, Warnock said Murphy wasn't performing in training, so I sort of sympathise a bit.
It's not the time this season, though, is it?
But I sort of think, you know, with that sort of 20, 25 minutes to go at Fulham, if he's on your bench, why not throw him on for it? You know, because he's got that pace.
He's got pace to burn. Even like Kadeem Harris. Mm. If you look at what Kadeem done when he was coming on as substitute, he was actually going outside his defender more than Murphy or Hoylett.
Mm.
So I would have tried the Kadeem on one wing and Mendes on the other. Right? Or I definitely would have tried the, okay, Mendes, Lang, you go for 60, 70 minutes and Kadeem come on. Last thing a defender wants to do is someone who's going to keep running at them like the last one did.
Yeah? Yeah.
So they're little, oh, mate, it just winds me up. It's like, it's obvious to me sometimes.
Mm.
And, you know, well, but ultimately, it's not my job to do it.
I mean, Warnock's reasoning for not playing Reid so much is that he thinks his best position is where Camaras has been playing.
I looked a little daft on Saturday.
Well, yeah, I mean, Saturday, I suppose, didn't really help argue that case. Mm. But I mean,
because fit them both in, can't you?
But I mean, if that's what he thought at the beginning of the season, why bring them both in?
Yeah, because you're giving yourself a problem.
It's an excuse that on the face of it kind of makes sense because Camaras has been excellent.
Why bring them both in and not bring in an out and out striker?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in fairness,
if you've got Mendes, Lang, you got Hoylett, you got Kadeem Harris, so you've got three very good wingers, all quick.
Mm.
Right? Then you buy Reid and Camarasa, who you think would want to play in the same position. Okay, you can have two players in the same position.
Mm.
And then you buy Murphy as well.
Yeah.
But don't get a striker.
Yeah. But I think
didn't score a whole heap of goals in the championship.
No. Well, I think hopes were definitely higher for Omar Nias. I think he's, you know, the expectations for him far outweighed the performances he's put in. Mm. You know, he wasn't even included in the matchday squad against Palace, and that I don't know what the reasoning is behind there, but he's been poor in the last few weeks.
Yeah, listen, Nias is not going to get you goals.
No.
But he gave you the threat that you didn't have.
But what is a threat if you're not scoring?
Yeah, but that was
the
catch 22.
You create space.
You're up the field. You're not defending anymore deep. You're up the field. You're getting corners. He's winning things that you don't normally get, and you rely on set pieces more than anything else.
No, I understand that, but I mean, can you afford to carry a player like that?
No, you can't. No, you can't. But beggars can't be choosers, Tom. And we're only focusing on what they brought in.
Mm.
Yeah.
We can't say
the alternative is Zahor, who didn't offer that threat,
right,
and wasn't offering goals because Cardiff could never get the sort of positions to create those chances because he wasn't holding the ball up.
Well, we said at the start of the season, right, Ben?
It's catch 22, isn't it?
We said at the start of the season, in order for Cardiff to survive in this league, they're going to have to buy. Definitely going to have to buy another striker on top of Kenneth Zahor, but that striker's got to be able to do all the things that Kenneth can do. So he's got to be able to be, and better. So he's got to be better in the air, because Kenneth's not strong in the air. He's got to be quick. He's got to be able to hold up the ball and ultimately score goals. All right? And we're not talking 25. We're talking get the double figures and we'll probably stay up. Is there a striker out there like that? Of course. Our business, again, if you look at the signings, very late. In the day, it was almost patchwork. It's not, this is what I'm saying, it's not right. If we got promoted last January, if we were thinking, right, if we get promoted this season, because it's now looking highly likely that we're going to be in there or thereabouts, but if we did get promoted, where do we need to strengthen? Who are we going to be looking to bring in? What's our list?
You asking me?
No, that should have been the conversation. But I felt the conversation was more like Neil being able to dictate and say, well, let's see. We got there, then okay, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And that's the wrong, it's upside down. The club should be saying, well, this is what we're going to do, or this is what we're thinking about. Yeah. And then the manager agrees or disagrees. And some of the signings you give him, some of the signings you don't. Some of the signings you say, this is who we're bringing in. And some of the signings he says, well, I want to bring in Tom and Ben. And you go, okay, but you're also bringing in John and Paul because they're experienced and we feel that this club does need a strong, you know, 28-year-old striker who can score you 10, 15 goals. You know, these are things. It was like, at the same time, it was all left to Neil. Yeah, I feel that's the way he wanted it also, so I can't criticise the club.
Yeah,
I do wonder if as well, Cardiff City and Warnock both actually, I don't think they realise perhaps how expensive the market is now, because you know, I heard Warnock say about Jefferson Lerma, you know, because I think he said I was looking at him for 5 million and he went to Bournemouth for about 25 million. So
it's
I don't think they
Well, they should have, because it happens right in front of me. It's not a secret. You know, when you've got Danny Drinkwater going to Chelsea for 30 million quid, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think he started 5 games, right? You've got to understand that once the TV money went up, you know, which they're happy to accept, mind, the 160 mil, they're still trying to accept that bigger pot of money, but still pretend like we're fishing now. Yeah, exactly. We did the last time we were in the Premier League. It's changed.
Yeah.
You know, the 5 million right back now is worth 15 million. The striker that you think, oh, take a chance on him, probably cost me 8 million, is now going to cost you 22 million.
Yeah.
Bournemouth showed that.
I mean, in fairness to Warnock, and he's been criticised a bit from this from the national press, but I think he's said in recent weeks that he believed Salah was going to offer that striking threat.
Too little, too late. It was like, and that to me, there would have been so much pressure on that boy. It would have been Andrew. If he didn't get off the scoring in the first two or three games, I'm telling you now, it would have gone backwards.
Mm-hmm.
In that situation, coming in January, it is so difficult. I don't know, I moved many times.
Especially when you're down that end of the
absolutely.
Table.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're in a battle royal, and you're coming in as the most expensive player, and 25,000 Cardiff fans are expecting you, all expecting you to score goals and get us out of the trouble we're in. You won on your own. The Messiah. It's difficult. You know, I think Adam Emilio even plays for us. It would have been difficult. It would have. He was a signing for now. Hope they get you. We would have said on this podcast, if he gets us 5 or 6 goals, that'd be brilliant.
Mm.
Right before the end of the season. But then let him settle in. You know, when you move to a new club from a different country, you don't know anybody. Yeah. Your home life, food, all these things that you, as a fan, you just take for granted. You only see the Saturday guy. You don't see whether he's going home and a little depressed because he's away from his family and doesn't know anybody and no one's really taking him out, or you know, he's been out once or twice with the lads but don't really share the same sort of things that they do. But it's not a given, and I think you've sold that as that's what would have happened. What we don't know is the truth. You know, better players than Emilio have failed in the Premier League. How many times we see a player who's now in the German league or the Spanish league and go, hey, he was crap at so and so. Right. And he's playing Champions League.
Well, Iago Aspas is one that springs to my mind. A Liverpool.
Diego Forlán.
Yeah.
Villarreal was.
Cornelius played at Wolves.
Yeah.
It is going to be interesting, though, that Man United game, because. I'm going to be just as interested to see how Man United line up, to be honest.
It's obviously only going to Solskjaer as well.
Yeah, because it's a nothing game.
Yeah.
For something that 2 weeks ago seemed to be like
you could
the cliffhanger.
Champions.
From a Cardiff fans' point of view, though, they must want to get one over on Ollie. You'd think, surely.
There is that.
I know there's nothing riding.
But it's just, you know, as a Cardiff fan, you just want to win.
Yeah.
And it'd be a beautiful thing to go to Old Trafford and win them.
Beating Man United.
Beat them, regardless of us getting promoted or relegated or whatever. Just to win at Old Trafford, get a point at Old Trafford, it goes down your history books. It's the biggest club in the world.
Do you think a win there, if it does happen, do you think a win there could, you know, set the tone for the future for Cardiff? I mean, you know, sign off the season on a high?
No. Because it's a one-off. It's not what you base your football knowledge, philosophy going forward on. It'll be a one-off. as simple as that, because of the situation they're in. A flowing, top running Manchester United, you know, steamrollers most teams in the Premier League.
But say Cardiff go there and get beat 5 or 6. I mean, that's gonna set a pretty somber mood for the summer, isn't it?
Well, you know,
I appreciate
some. You almost expect that. So it's any, you know, if they went up and got lost 4-0, 5-0, it'd be no surprise.
I don't think it would change
anything
now.
Change anything?
No. No. Yes, whilst we want to.
It's
well.
A nothing game. It's got nothing riding on it for either team. It's you hear them. It's one of those games where it's just pit us out into nothing.
I mean, with the shackles off though, if Cardiff do end up sort of having a go, is that some kind of way that's going to be quite frustrating to watch, isn't it? I mean, considering the performances they turned in.
If they went and had a go and they may give a good account of themselves, all it does is highlight the fact that
they've got it in them.
do you use it as a chance to sort of try something, some partnerships? No, Paul's not here, but you know, Bobby Reedham, Ken Zola.
Yeah. Hold on a minute. You're gonna unzip yourself and have a little afro going on. you can do. I mean, it's a nothing game, but you always can get something out of it. You know, you might. The sad thing for me is you've not got a young lad from the academy or from the 23s saying, right, go on, son, make your debut at Old Trafford. And for him next season, that would be massive.
Yeah.
Right, for his confidence and everything, regardless of whether it's a nothing game or anything, I'm here, I've arrived.
Yeah.
This is what it's like at the top level. Well, I'm going to be playing in a lower level tomorrow, next season. So if I play to my best, I know I'm going to have a good season in the Championship whenever called upon, but I feel I can match it with most in the Premier League.
I do wonder if. I mean, you say it's a nothing game. From Cardiff's point of view, perhaps it is a nothing game, but is there not a little bit of pressure on Ollie to win this? I mean, it's not been a great end to the season.
I'm not bothered about Ollie or Man United, honestly. That's not my focus at all. My focus is solely what Cardiff are, what Cardiff do, where they're going, how they're building, what's the vision, what's the strategy, how the club is structured. These are all things that I'm interested in. Like I say,
Dom's problem, isn't it?
Making them better. That's, yeah, let Dom handle that one.
But
with his two followers.
The reason I say
I'm only joking, Dom. I love you.
He'll be listening.
But the reason I say that is that it's quite bizarre from a Man United point of view to go into a game against Cardiff, sort of feeling a bit of pressure. And sort of Cardiff, as I know you say it's a one-off game, but I mean, are they ever going to have a better chance to win Old Trafford?
I'm not bothered. I take Cardiff going to Old Trafford and losing 15-0 if they were staying in the Premier League. I'm not bothered. I'm really not. You know, like I said, there's things that can be utilised with younger players or players that haven't played, or you can say this is the beginning for next season, blah, blah, blah. But you're going to go and sign players in the summer. You don't know if the manager's still going to be here, his coaching staff, his scouting staff. You know, it could be all change in a week's time, or it could be the same. But if you're the club, if you're the owner, how are you going to make that coaching staff better? You know, because you say what you like, none of us are perfect, none of us have finished article. You know, Pep Guardiola, tell you straight, I'm still learning, except for you.
Obviously. Yeah, I'm getting there.
Yeah, you're almost perfection.
just remembering to ask Blakey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, we'll take another quick break and then we'll be back with some
Ask Blakey. Oh no, you forgot that.
5 predictions. Right, okay, we're back for the final part of this podcast. It's time for 45. That's you, the listener's chance to win £25,000. It's not bad, is it?
I'm still waiting for my check.
Yeah, I think you've probably banked around £200,000 off all the predictions you've got right this season from ABBA.
I wish my predictions are a nightmare, mate.
Okay, well, you can end your season on a high here.
Yeah, come on. Someone win the big 25 large and then you can come into the boot room and
share it around.
Yeah, we can bathe in it.
Like Scrooge would duck, would dive into a pool of money. Yeah. Alright, so first game up is Brighton against Manchester City.
Oh, Man City, 3-0.
3-0. Then we got Burnley against Arsenal.
No, I go Man City 2-0, sorry.
So, big difference.
You're going to regret that, Blake.
Is it going to be a little bit tense? You think it's going to be a late goal? Or?
What, Man City? They'll score one in each half. They'll take it easy. Yeah. Listen, I know what happened last night was out of this world. And I love Liverpool and Liverpool fans for it. But, you know, take it from me, Liverpool fans. This year City win the Premier League, next year, whoever wins the Premier League, if it's you, which I think it'll be Liverpool next year, because I don't think psychologically City will be able to go for a third time. Yeah, Liverpool and Man City dominate the game in this country for the next 10 years, i.e. Arsenal, Man United in the 90s. You're the first, mate. I'm telling you. They're both so well set up, so well structured.
Yeah.
You look at the players they bring in, the scouting, everything. You can say, oh, it's money.
But they got a vision, isn't it?
It's a vision, mate. It's a shared vision.
There you go. Big room exclusive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, so next is Burnley against Arsenal.
Burnley at home against Arsenal?
Yeah.
I'll go Burnley 2-1.
Like that. I do like that. Leicester against Chelsea.
Leicester against Chelsea away from home and in the Champions League. No pressure. Leicester playing some good football. I'll go 3-2 Chelsea. Come on, Chelsea.
Liverpool against Wolves.
Liverpool against Wolves. I go 2-1 late winner. Liverpool.
All in vain, though. And then Spurs against Everton.
Spurs against
Everton. Being notoriously hard to predict.
Spurs, Everton. I'll go 2-1 Everton.
2-1 Everton. Lovely stuff. And then finally, final game to predict.
Cardiff.
Away to Manchester United.
Cardiff, Man United. I'll go a 1-1 draw.
What are you, Tom? Or Tom's?
What, Cardiff?
Yeah, I'm not allowed. You're not doing
45, mate. You want 25 lads, look.
You're not allowed to enter.
I'll be optimistic. I'll go Cardiff 1-0.
I'm going to go for a ball 0-0 draw.
I'll take a point. Anyway, I'll take a point. Oh, you're making a prediction? Wow, he's actually in. Don't let him twist you.
I always make a prediction.
He made it last week. It was under pressure for the first time.
I've made predictions ever since I've been there.
Yeah.
The podcast would grow and grow.
Since you got, yeah, it will grow when I get there.
It's gone, mate. Where is it?
2-2.
After all that, he sits on the fence against Flinders.
Yeah. Interesting, Noel's gone for a Man United win.
That's Dom Booth says 2-1 Man United.
Who, Dom does?
Probably.
Yeah, of course he will.
I haven't asked him, but I'm sure he does. So there we go. That's it for the Boot Room today. It's been a pleasure having the two new Toms.
No problem. Yes.
No worries.
I'm sure they've laid down a marker now for Paul.
Yes. Next week, is our last show.
Yep, of the season.
The last
Premier League Boot Room. Hopefully not for too long. But quite a sad note.
Hey, mate, listen, it's look.
I feel like good mood at the beginning.
No, they've done, listen. They've done better than like most gave them credit for. A lot better. What I'm saying is there's so much room for improvement in lots of different areas. Yeah, that's what I hope the club take from the podcast, if they listen. Well, I know they listen.
Yeah.
Right? That they can improve. Don't anyone get on their high horse and think, oh, he's having a go at me, or he's having a go at my coach, or he's having a go at that, or he's having a go. No. This is just Blake's just looking at the club holistically, and you don't have to agree with it, disagree with it. I'm not bothered, it's just an opinion, yeah?
I want to know who sounds like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask who that's
supposed to be. Well, you know.
that's a very specific region, I don't quite wear that. Yeah, that's it.
I'm not great with accents.
I don't know. I thought you'd be a good impressionist.
This
podcast is just dragging on.
People love it. It's coming to the end of the season. They don't want to see it go.
There's going to be people like jogging, doing their runs. They're like, this podcast should have finished about 10 minutes.
Hey, they got the cricket podcast to look forward to for the summer.
I think that went to Manchester with Dom. I think that one probably is. I think that's another one that's gone with Dom.
Okay. Oh, Glamorgan's now in Manchester.
I've done most of the podcasts about Glamorgan up there.
What did you do? Cricket podcast.
I'm at Pavalge, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm
a member at Glamorgan as well.
There you are, look, see. Yeah, see, look, yeah, see. I've just created a podcast out of that. The three of you.
All the pieces are there.
Yeah.
You just got to put them together, mate.
Come on, Benjamin. Button. You can do it.
Hello, welcome to the Glamorgan.
Yeah, good win yesterday.
That's all for the boot room. For all the latest Cardiff City news, you can catch it all on Wales Online. That was just me pointing.
Horrible.
Love yourself. Great work.